thanks for adding to my already large to-do list, Nick. Thanks.
Welcome to another episode of the Rogue Startups Podcast with Craig Hewitt and Dave Rodenbaugh. This is a podcast documenting the journey as self-funded business founders and sharing lessons, tips, and tricks for businesses following the same path as ours. The journey is long and winding, but we're glad you're joining us for it. And now it's time to go rogue with Dave and Craig.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the Rogue Startups Podcast. This week, Dave and I are very excited to have a special guest on the show talking all about A-B split testing your website. Nick DeSabato, how you doing?
Hey there, I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks for coming on the show today. I'm really excited about taking Dave's new baby and showing it to the world in this in this very revealing way.
No, you're excited that Dave's new baby gets torn up and podcast motor gets left alone. That's what you're excited.
Yeah, we're not ready for prime time yet, so yeah.
which is fine. Nick, welcome to the show here today. Can you just give everybody a little bit of background on you who might not be familiar with your expertise and what you do?
Yeah, I run an interaction design consultancy called Draft. You can take a look at draft.nu. And the big thing that we do is research-driven A-B testing. So I take a look at how your users are behaving, take a look at how your prospective customers are behaving, even maybe get them on the phone, survey them, ask questions, say what they want, see what they need, and try and create a site that matches their needs. I do that basically by running A-B tests and determining what works best for your customers and for your business needs.
Are most of your customers new or existing software businesses or websites?
They tend to be around for a little bit because if you have certain base level of traffic you need for statistical significance, you need that. You have to be growing at least. There are a couple instances where I've worked with relatively new businesses, but it's because they've got a hit on their hands and a lot of people are visiting them and a lot of people are signing up. And so they're kind of riding the proverbial rocket, so to speak. But mostly it's established businesses.
Cool. And yeah, we sort of hinted at it, but we're going to sort of be taking up not a case study look at recapture.io, but sort of using it as an example to talk through a little bit of kind of the framework and methodology that you use, Nick, when you're looking at like how you look at a website and kind of the approach you take to analyzing it for user testing and split testing, right?
Awesome. Yeah, sounds great.
Cool. Well, Dave, you want to kind of take over and get started then?
Yeah, sure. So let me give you a little bit of background on Recapture here. So I just acquired this back in December. And in that time, I got to learn a little bit about it and try to figure out who my customers are and what does the traffic look like and what is interesting to them and stuff like that. So I don't necessarily have all the answers, but hopefully I've got a few. I've got my Google Analytics here up to tell you some stuff that you might be interested in. Okay. But I know that the previous owners were running one A-B test, which is probably a little bit embarrassing to admit, but I'm just going to throw it out there. And it was only on the homepage that they did this. They didn't test any other pages that I'm aware of.
Okay.
So they're using Optimizely for that. And it's hilarious because the way that they did their test, they actually split it on www.recapture.io versus straight recapture.io. So you can actually see the two versions of the site, which normally is not easy to do. And if you look at the two pages, it's pretty obvious which one is probably the better choice. And I haven't looked at the Optimizely data lately, but I do know that when I was talking to those guys that they were saying the one that had the stronger copy. And if you look at the two versions, you'll see this pretty fast. One of them has very benefit driven copy and the other one is just sort of weak and is talking a lot about features and stuff like that. So it's pretty obvious which one is the one that does better. And they're directing most of their traffic to that right now. I haven't actually changed anything since I've taken it over here yet. Although that's on my to-do list.
Okay. I'm taking a look at all of these things here. All right. I didn't even notice the www difference until you mentioned it. I just typed in recapture.io into my browser. That's not the way I would configure that.
No, it's not the way I would have done it either. And I don't really know why they did that. Like, usually you just throw in a 301 redirect and all of your traffic goes to one canonical URL. They've somehow split it up, and it definitely messes with analytics. And when I'm looking at things like, I installed Inspectlet so I could see heat maps, because they didn't have anything that was showing me heat maps of what users were paying attention to.
Great.
And it was really bizarre, because I was getting two different versions of the page, and then I finally realized that they were running this A/B test, and that the users were reacting to the pages very differently, obviously. And I didn't realize that those two pages were not one single page with a canonical URL. And yeah, I discovered all of that when I set that up in January. So
that's exciting.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. So let me walk you through a little bit about what the process looks like for me. Let's say I hire you. We start working together as a new client and everything is great. Here's generally what I would be doing. I would be setting up heat maps, so good job. I would be fine-tuning your Google Analytics to figure out what your conversion rate actually looks like, because you would be shocked how many businesses don't establish that as a goal. Adding in revenue as a goal, that sort of stuff. Doing all of the like preparatory work. I would also probably, because you haven't done this lately, survey all of your customers, and we can talk a little bit about what that research methodology looks like. And I would wait a few days, get back the heat maps, get back all the analytics, start my analysis of it, see where people are actually going and what they're saying, where people are coming from, what traffic sources, fixing all of the dumb browser bugs that you've probably neglected on Google Analytics. Like, I'll go into your browser report and your device report and figure out if the conversion rate is dropping. Okay, well, if it's dropping, where is it dropping? What problems are people encountering? Because you'd be shocked at how many revenue leaking browser bugs exist, where like form validation doesn't work well. People at the site don't actually go through and check out correctly. They don't test their own checkout forms. So I would go through and do that sort of stuff. The next thing I would do is what's called a heuristic evaluation. And this is basically a site teardown, where I would go through, and it's the only time I'm not actually asking your customers or assessing your customers what they're doing. I would go through and figure out, okay, well, what obvious things are happening here that might be messing with conversion in some capacity or might be confusing the customers. And this is the like best practices type stuff that you see people start and stop A/B tests with, like what your call to action reads and what your headlines read. And that's only the very beginning, right? Mm-hmm. Once I get back data from the surveys, I'll often, if they're particularly interesting surveys from a few customers, I will actually offer to get them on a Skype call or a phone call, and I will hand them $50 Amazon gift card for their time and just ask them extremely open-ended, non-leading questions about what drove you to this site? What was the last thing that held you back from purchasing? What competitors did you evaluate? What kind of needs is it providing for you? What are the biggest issues that you're finding with it right now? How did getting started actually work out for you? So these are all things that I would typically be asking a SaaS business. And those tend to give me a ton of insights that allow me to make and then test changes to your funnel. So it's not a matter of saying, okay, we're going to change the headline today. It's a matter of finding the right headline in the right way that speaks to the genuine needs that people are feeling. People don't measure this most of the time, I've found, and that's really sad. So I help them develop a process for it, and it happens to involve A/B testing. So for your site, if I were just putting on the heuristic evaluation hat, could talk a little bit about that. There are a few tiny things I would suggest on the homepage. One of them is the sameness between the two call to action buttons in the masthead, sign up free or try the demo. I like having secondary call to actions, but having them both look the exact same and be treated in the same way People often end up confusing them, or they just go to the demo, or there's not a hierarchy enforced in it. So one thing I recommend is just make the demo button gray. I don't recommend having a ghost button because those people never touch them. For some reason, actual customers never know that that is a button when they just put a one pixel outline. ConversionXL has research that proves that. Another thing is the rotator. People might be using this rotator where it says, so the first thing says intuitive drag and drop email builder, no coding necessary. I'd wonder what proportion of people are doing that aren't also logging in, right? Because if you're logging in, you have no reason to be poking around the rotator. But if you aren't logging in, then you're possibly a tire kicker, curious about what's going on. What share of people is doing that? So I would run a heat map, try and figure that out. Most of the time, I just see people not care about that piece. And so that usually seems like an opportunity to expand out that content, or fold it into a demo in some capacity, or make it a longer form page. I would play with the set up your first campaign now, start building your email list fast. The like call to action, like hit thing that happens here. I would play around. I would probably run a heat map that determines whether or not people are actually engaging with these things. If they aren't, then don't constantly get in their face with like, sign up now. How about you sign up now? Why don't you sign up now? Because you're trying to, this is a B2B SaaS business. So you have to begin a relationship and not constantly try and, I call it the making out on the first date problem. It's like, how about now? Do you love me now? Like, yeah. Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Totally.
So those are, it's just small stuff, but I look at these things and I'm like, why is it in this way? And these are very basic 101 things for a podcast, but it's where you start, right? So I think, okay, well, why is every button purple? Okay, well, what is that actually doing to the behavior? Let's look at the behavior. Because it's never like, this is bad, change it. It's usually the case on maybe a form or something like that where like your validation is buggy, or your mobile keyboards aren't set up correctly, something like that. So if I go to recapture.io/register on an iPhone, and I go to the email field, does it pop the email address keyboard on an iPhone, for instance? It does the correct thing on Safari on my Mac, but I'm looking at a Mac right now. So,
going back to what you said about the slider here that they have, how do you see the difference in, I don't know, engagement or conversion or whatever, however you measure it, with something like this or even static images versus video, like a demo video or an explainer video on a homepage? Kind of generally, how do you look at when those are good and how they perform, I guess?
The answer is it depends.
Yeah, right.
videos tend to work better when, in my experience, and granted I have a lot of experience and I'm going to keep hedging on that, when they veer away from being like just a screencast and they tend to be a little bit more professionally produced. So video, it's very easy to half-ass video and to not do it well. And so you can say, okay, well, put a video there and replace it. Well, then usually you're just going into Screeny or something like that and then recording something. And it's your microphone or whatever. If you do video well and it's a polished, nice video, it will probably trump the screenshots that you've got here. It would even trump like a face on here, something like that, or like a photo of somebody, or the screenshot in situ and the a nicely appointed desk and an iMac or something like that. Those are all different, approaches that you can be taking with it. There's never any one test that works always all the time. And so, a lot of the time with video, for example, I have to recommend, okay, well, let's do a video. And then it's like, well, now we just have a $5,000 production budget and we're doing all of these things. And will the test work? And I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I would say here, you can probably get a reasonably quick win by testing this against other static imagery. Those are much cheaper to produce. You could possibly test it against a screencast if you have, say, a really nice microphone because you, you know, are a podcaster also. A lot of people don't do that. Or put background music in or something like that. Anything that you can do to make it seem a little bit more polished and professional looking. Does that answer the question? I feel like I'm dancing around it a little bit.
Yeah, no, totally. I think it's, yeah, I don't think anyone should expect a, this is or better or worse, but the times and things you should think about for when one is potentially better than the other. That's, yeah, that's great. Because I think for all of this, just the framework of decision making is the most important thing.
Yeah, yeah. Like philosophically, there's no one thing that works all the time. And I think in the tech industry, especially, we're like, oh, this thing works. Now everybody is doing it. Like 2 years ago when parallax was the thing, right? And then it falls out of favor. And well, because that worked well once, that's not necessarily proof that it's going to continue working. And that's why you test it and measure the impact of it.
So let me ask you a quick question here, Nick. When you say a video might work better here, you're kind of thinking not necessarily like a benefits walkthrough, which is kind of boring in my opinion, but something more like an explainer video, right? Where you say, here's how you, the customer, can be successful with this product. And here's a, you know, a fake case study on how Bob, you know, was able to recover revenue on his site using my tool, that kind of a thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's definitely it, where it's, almost more of a commercial, right? Like it's like, well, Bob has problems with abandoned carts. And it's become a huge issue for his business. Wouldn't it be great if there was a solution that provided Bob with fewer abandoned carts and actually encouraged people to follow through with the sale? Well, there is. It's recapture. Here you go. Here's what it does. And then get out of the way. Like, don't make it like a 20-minute infomercially type video. Just be like, this is what we do. This is what we are. Isn't it great? Put it there and be done with it. Making a short video is way harder than making a long video because you have to edit.
Yes, yes.
Everyone's going to argue, right?
Sorry. Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I had hired a guy to do an explainer video for a college registration site that I had, and I thought that it sold it pretty well, but it was like a minute and a half. And I noticed that that video got a fair number of hits of people watching it because I had posted it up on YouTube so that I could track the views on it easier. This was several years ago before we had a lot of better video tools than we do now.
Yeah.
And yeah, it seemed like it engaged people and they'd watch it all the way to the end. So I was like, all right, that's cool. And it actually wasn't too terribly expensive to produce because it was all animated and I had a guy out of Indonesia do it. It was like $500.
Yeah. So one thing I do with another research technique is I will record people's sessions as they're going through a site. So it's called generally behavior recording and visual website optimizer, and you're following somebody's cursor and scroll position as they're going through a site, right? So on the homepage, okay, we're running this video on the homepage. Great. It's part of the A/B test. We're going to do behavior recordings on it, and then we're going to see how people are actually responding. Analyzing behavior recordings is a gigantic pain because you have to go through dozens of videos and some of them may be garbage. But this is a perfect situation if you have like an assistant or an intern or somebody to help you out with it. How many people are not just watching the video all the way through or clicking on the video, because those are quantitative things that you can pull out of your analytics framework, but what do they do after the video? Do they start scrolling through the site a little bit more slowly and taking stock of the pitch a little bit? Those are things that you can't really get out of a heat map. Are they beelining for pricing afterward? That's something you can pull out of analytics, sure. But it's also something that, like, okay, is there a share of users who's not convinced, right? And this is all more, I don't know, like slow and thoughtful and deliberate ways of approaching it and thinking, okay, how is this person actually behaving? And I do this all the time with people. Video would be catnip for me to use this technique for. So,
cool.
So as you get into really split testing, so you're going to split test, you know, purple buttons versus orange buttons, or you're going to, you know, sign up free and try the demo versus just one button on the homepage. What's kind of the roadmap for, okay, we're gonna split test this thing. How long do you let it run? What kind of tools do you like to use? And then kind of the so what afterwards?
Yeah, that's great. So the overall process, I use Trello to manage all of the testing ideas that we have. And so it's basically a project management tool. And I have the test idea, the research that backs it, and hopeful outcome from it. So I'm putting those together. Let's say we decide on an idea. Then I go into Visual Website Optimizer, VWO.com. That's the one that I use. It's VWO and Optimizely are basically the Canon and Nikon of the A-B testing world. They're in a feature shootout. It makes them both better. It's great. I use VWO. I recommend both of them. And I'll create a test. They have kind of a WYSIWYG editor. And so you can, for simple things like I deleted this call to action, 10 minutes of work for me, right? I can put these together. For more ambitious reworks, like let's change the entire pricing pages layout, I'll usually prototype something locally on the server and send it to a different URL. So what we were talking about with that, you know, bare domain versus www, I'll do something like example.com/welcome and example.com/start or something like that. And so it just redirects 50% of the traffic to example.com/start and measures what you're doing. That's a different kind of A-B test that you can build out in VWO, and it's very easy to put together on that end. The next thing I do is I establish goals. So revenue is one goal, so that's average revenue per user. Actual sales rate, so your conversion rate. Like, you know, hits to the thank you page I'm usually using as the metric for that sort of thing, or the beginning of the onboarding for a SaaS business. And then I'm tracking other things, like what proportion of people are going to pricing? Well, it's the next step in the funnel, so you want to move people along there. But if we end up hurting the conversion rate as a result, what is the pricing page doing then? How do we follow through on that? How many people are going to hit the sign up button? If they are, let's, you know, I'm looking at your pricing. If there are links to individual plans, so you've got established and professional on Recapture right now. If there were individual sign-up buttons for those plans, are more people going to the professional? Are more people going to enterprise, et cetera? How I determine the amount of traffic, I basically find a primary goal, and that is almost always either raw signups or revenue. There's pretty much no reason you shouldn't be doing those if you're a SaaS business. Maybe conversions from trial, but that makes the window of testing longer. So you might do trial creations if you have trials. And I'm looking at, in Google Analytics, if I don't have any previous tests created, what the conversion rate was and what the traffic numbers were. And then I use a tool that basically calculates the sample size for me, and that is through Evan Williams A-B testing tools. Not Evan Williams, Evan Miller. Not the bourbon guy. Right. And so
I like this A-B test already. This is sounding good.
So you pour yourself some bourbon and then you know. You go to Evan Miller's A-B testing tools, and basically I plug in, here's what your conversion rate is, here's what your monthly traffic is, and it tells you how much time you need to be running the test for. I note that in my calendar, and then I start the test. One day later, I look at the test to make sure that nothing is broken on it. And then I say, okay, it's great. And then I don't look at the test until it's done.
Oh, you have to look at it every day, right?
You have to refresh the test. No. And everybody wants that because of two reasons. Number one, testing is terribly exciting. And number two, Mark Zuckerberg once put a poster in Facebook that said, move fast and break things, and you believed it. So... you need to unlearn that. and just every morning, instead of checking your test results, take a deep breath, pour yourself a pot of some Sencha tea, and just look out the window of your house or your office and look at the birds, and don't do that.
And then pour yourself a bourbon because the Sencha tea doesn't take the edge off.
Yeah, it made you a little hyper, and now you really want to check the test. So bourbon, but then you don't. I don't know. You might have to just alternate between uppers and downers because the bourbon might remove your willpower. It's challenging. But yeah, so you wait, and then once that amount of time has lapsed, you go in and you check how your test is doing. VWO and Optimizely try and calculate the success or failure of your test for you. There are three potential outcomes for your test. There is either a winner, a loser, or what is called an inconclusive or a null result. Those are inconclusives are by far the majority of A/B testing results, and you're going to have to be okay with that. Before you call your test, you should put out a game plan of what do you do if you encounter a winner, a loser, or an inconclusive? Because if you look at the test results and then it says whatever it says, you automatically are colored by what that is. So you should come in with a game plan, look at the test results, stop the test, and then act on your game plan. So for example, there's one. There was one test I ran for a client called KeySmart. They make like everyday carry tools, and it's basically like a Swiss Army knife for your keychain. It's great. They had like five different models at one point, and I ran a test that got rid of four of them and just shunted everybody to one model. And they found out that revenue didn't change at all. We came in with a game plan that said, if it wins, we go with the one model. If it loses, we go with the five models, or we run a test that starts with three of the models or something like that. We take a look at the sales figures, see if there are outliers. But if it's inconclusive, we go with the one model. Why? Because it reduces manufacturing costs and warehousing costs and service costs. And all of those things were putting a huge drag on the business. And so I ended up saving, I don't even know how much money, and I don't know if I can publicly disclose it, but a lot. We're talking double-digit percentage margins in the business. And it was an insanely huge win for them, right? So that worked out really well. But we wouldn't have been able to have the presence of mind and critical distance on if we hadn't thought that. VWO, as far as the actual numbers on how you calculate those things, the tools around that, VWO and Optimizely have their own way of calculating it that's kind of a black box, and they view it as a competitive advantage. And they use, you might have heard the term like Bayesian algorithms in the past if you're a particular type of nerd. It's what is used for like spam detection in email software. And what it is saying like, okay, well, you're getting emails that are spam that have these words in them. It's very like rudimentary machine learning. Based on that, we believe that these other emails are spam. We have a hunch on it. You're using the same with A/B testing. You're using existing behavior and existing traffic numbers to try and predict the outcome of the test later on. And it works pretty well, but I'm paranoid. And so I use just basic statistics. I go back to Evan Miller, not Evan Williams, and I use what's called a chi-square test. You've probably heard about this in statistics, where I have the number of conversions, the number of visitors for each branch of the test, and I plug them in and determine what successful confidence we can be about this test. You generally want between 95 and 100% confidence. I, with my bigger clients, go for 99% confidence on the lift for a given test result.
So those other tools are giving you like a predicted outcome, not the actual statistical number. Yeah.
Mm. They're giving you an informed hunch, but a hunch.
Uh-huh.
That's right.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah. Based on the raw statistics?
It's based on basically using Bayesian calculation to, it's not, I mean, it is, there's statistics involved in it, they have a like huge, horrendously complicated deep dive that I will not bore your listeners to death about how this thing actually works. And as you know, the business owner of Recapture, you shouldn't have to worry about that, right? You should just be like, all it needs to do is answer the question, should I go with the variant for all of my customers or not?
Right.
Which one should I do? Because it's either launched or it isn't, you know? There's right. No binary in that situation. So it can help teach you in a faster way about what that is. And so they've done this in part because the biggest issue with A/B testing is you don't get enough traffic or qualified wallet out traffic to get to statistical significance fast enough. VWO solves that problem by making Bayesian calculations and doing informed hunches. I solve that problem by going with clients that get enough traffic, which is not what a lot of people want to be hearing, right? So if you're
all right, so let me jump in and ask you a question, Nick.
Sure.
What is enough traffic?
That is an excellent question. So go through the you can run the minimum sample size calculator to figure that out. And it depends on your conversion rate and your monthly visitors. So I generally say you're more or less in the clear if you get 500 sales a month and they are just revenue generating transactions a month. That's not actually true. It's the number by which I think it's almost a no-brainer that you should be doing A/B testing. That number can be much lower depending on how high your conversion rate is. So if you know you're getting maybe only 150, 160 hit, sales a month, but you're getting like 300 customers coming in every month, that's a very high conversion rate. You can probably detect changes more easily in that scenario. If you're getting 20,000 customers a month, you have a very low conversion rate, and so you would need more traffic in order to detect a minimum effect in the change that's occurring there. I think I just totally flubbed that. You need a minimum of, you need to be able to detect a minimum amount of lift in what the change is actually providing. So in order to do that, you would have to get way more customers in. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, it does. So what happens when you're on the lower side of that where you're, I mean, I would love to tell you that I'm getting 500 sales a month. I'd love to tell you I was getting 100 sales a month. I'm nowhere in either of those categories. So what happens when you're lower and you're getting, you know, do you ever measure according to number of sessions that are on your page? And if you're trying to just get people more engaged, so when you say 500 sales, is that the same thing as 500 signups to try your service if you're just trying to drive people into trials?
It would be 500 by whatever metric you're doing, right? So, yeah, that would be signups if you're just doing trials. I tend to go less by things that are like engagement-y metrics or like time on site or something like that, because it could be a sign that people are confused, right? They're not necessarily understanding what the value is, or they're intrigued but thinking it's not for them right now. And neither of those things actually make your business money, right? I think there's a deeper question there, which is what happens if you don't get enough traffic? Like, what do you do, right? Well, can juice your traffic numbers by running a horrendously expensive AdWords campaign. Don't do that. At least go through the heat map and heuristic evaluation bits of what I've been talking about. And I can provide you with the like actual questionnaire that I do for my heuristic evaluations so you can see exactly what needs to be checked off for that. I would focus also on outreach. So start a blog. Start a mailing list. Start getting customers in. Write about what you know. Start driving more traffic that way. There are tons and tons of people out there providing literature about how to get more people into your business by providing valuable content to them. I would recommend focusing on that, which feels a little bit like counterintuitive, right? Like I'm recommending design changes, right? But if you're trying to get more traffic, that's a good, reliable way to get more traffic, boost SEO, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It will also help your sales, right? You end up getting more traffic. It's going to end up making you more money. Lastly, as far as measuring the impact of design decisions, what I do is I add annotations to Google Analytics to say, I changed this part of the page to this at this point. And I say, okay, well, it happened on this day. And then 3 weeks later, I come back and say, okay, did the conversion rate go up or did it go down? That's the biggest tactic that you can do where you're trying to measure the economic impact of a design decision. And you can do that without having to A/B test it, but you're also kind of operating a little bit fast and loose with it, right? Like you're not testing, you're just doing the thing, pushing it out live and hoping that it did not you know, harm your conversion rate or anything. So those are the three things that I recommend for people that are, you know, below that threshold and not able to do A-B testing effectively right now.
Okay. And so I've read a number of articles on A-B testing, and there are several people out there that sort of, I don't want to say that they poo-poo it, but there's a lot of things that they point out to say, you know, if you've got an A-B test, here's some gotchas that you have to watch out for, and one of them is the novelty effect. So what would you say about that?
The novelty effect being what the effect, you know, the fact that you're doing A-B testing to begin with and you're excited about it and all that?
No. Sorry, I should have defined that better. So the novelty effect is where you make a change on your site, and just because it's different, not because it's better, it engages the customers for a short period of time, but that effect wears off after 30 or 60 days.
Yeah, so that's one situation where putting in analytics events to see if you suffer from that effect, that could actually benefit. Because if you end up seeing kind of like a step function up and then it kind of settles down after time and your conversion rate, like, you know, slumps back after a little bit. There's also a question of what your traffic sources are coming from. So if I saw that, I would, and this has nothing to do with A-B testing, right? Like, I would look at, okay, is it organic traffic coming in? Is it coming from an ad campaign? Is it coming from a Facebook post? What expectations would they have in those situations? I don't think that A-B testing necessarily always has to suffer from the novelty effect. And I think that's, it's a valid concern, but like, testing is one tool you're using in the broader spectrum of optimization. And you shouldn't be relying on tests to assume that. That is definitely one pitfall that you can encounter, though.
Cool. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So, Nick, you know, we've run through a lot of kind of the framework and the decision-making things that you look at with your approach to customers. Are there any things that generally people should look at when they're approaching that heuristic evaluation of their website that are kind of the common gotchas that you see over and over?
When you're doing the evaluation, don't just do it once and assume that you're finished with it. That's the kind of thing that I typically do every like 3 to 6 months, because you don't know if things break or if things change in a way that's unexpected. Obviously, in future evaluations, things are going to hopefully go better because you will have fixed a lot of stuff. But I wouldn't necessarily assume that you're done, right? It's a constant ongoing process.
Cool. No, totally makes sense. Totally makes sense. Dave, did you have any other questions specific about recapture?
You know, I've been like madly taking notes back here, despite the fact that I know this is going to be a podcast episode. I've been writing down all this stuff that Nick is talking about here, and I'm like, oh my God, this is so valuable. No, I don't, but thanks for adding to my already large to-do list, Nick. Thanks.
I'm not sorry.
I know you're not. I know you're not. And I feel like I need to pay you already for just having you on the podcast episode. So I'll have to send you a bottle of bourbon.
Okay, sounds good. Cool. You know what I like now, so there you go.
There you go.
Yeah, it was definitely a Freudian slip. I like it.
Yeah, that was good.
Cool. Awesome. Well, Nick, thank you so much. I love kind of the format that we had here. Dave, I'm sorry that we used Recapture as kind of the case study here, but I think it provided a really cool framework for Nick to be able to talk kind of in context about a specific example, and some super valuable stuff that he was throwing out there. So Nick, thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you guys so much. I really appreciate it.
If folks want to kind of learn more about you and connect with you online and learn more about Draft, where can they do all that?
So draft.nu is the main site. If you are curious about my writing, I have a course about A-B testing that you can go to abtestingmanual.com for, and that should be it. Yeah.
Cool. Nick, thank you so much for coming on the show today. Super helpful, I know, for Dave in particular, because since we were talking about recapture, but for me and everyone else, just in terms of the framework and thought process here, it's awesome stuff. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
And that's our episode for this week. If you have any questions or comments, please let us know at podcast@roguestartups.com. Subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Rogue Startups. And be sure to visit roguestartups.com for full show notes on each episode. If you're enjoying the show, we'd sure appreciate a review in iTunes. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.